Irene, how long were you in Vienna?
We were there for 20 months. We had expected to be there for 2 years, but we ended up coming back after 20 months. And so we landed there with a five-year-old and Roger had turned five the day we left New Zealand, or the day before we left New Zealand. So Jenny was three, and by then Stephen was a month old. And it was quite funny because we didn't know that Germans don't use the sound of a J. Roger was a name they couldn't say, and Jenny was a name they couldn't say. But luckily, we decided to call Stephen, so Stefan they could say. And Roger went through life there being called Roger, and Jenny was Shaney, and Stephen was Stefan. And so they would ask, people in the street would ask us, because it was most unusual to have three children. We were thought to be like animals to have had three children, you know. To have one was acceptable, and have two was a bit doubtful. But to have three, that was like an uncontrolled animal to have three. And people would stop us in the street to look at the baby and would say, "Mein Gott, das ist ein Kind." It was a child in that carry cot that we were carrying along, and so they would ask the name of the kids, and so we quickly learned to say that they were Roger and Shaney and Stefan, and they'd say, "Oh, Stefan!" And so he grew up from birth thinking there was something wonderful about him. Where no one spoke any English, and it took quite a while, a few weeks anyway, for them to not cry every day when I left them. But they were together, they had each other. But once they settled down, they loved it because they were really kind people at the kindergarten. It was just a gorgeous place. And they went off for a summer camp at one stage for, I don't know, a week perhaps. And it was lovely, you know.
And did they learn to speak German?
Yes. They didn't carry it on, actually. When we came back to New Zealand, I tried to keep on speaking German to them, and I hadn't really learned it very well either. And they'd say, "Speak English, speak English." And I'd say, "I'm surely going to speak English." And they'd say, you do. And so I gave up after a while and spoke English to them. But I thought it would be lovely if they could keep it on, you know, but they didn't. Life was pretty difficult. We had to, one of us had to take the kids to kindergarten, which was right across town, and you just had to walk there or run there or whatever, you know. If it was me, you know, I had the baby in the pram as well. There's no way to take a pram on any public transport, so we walked everywhere. I was pretty fit there. We walked all over Vienna. But, So I would go take them to kindergarten and come back home and do my shopping, and I would have written a note for myself in German of what I wanted to buy with a little dictionary that I carried everywhere with me, and I'd go to the shop and ask for what I wanted, you know, and if they asked me a question, I was at a loss to know what they were asking me, but I gradually learned bits and pieces, you know. But I went to the university ran a class for Auslanders to learn Deutsch, and I went to that for some time, but then we all caught bad flu or colds, you know, and I couldn't go anymore, so I only learned the basics. I learned how to pronounce the German properly, I think. And so when I walked into a shop, the first thing I'd say was that I couldn't speak German. Entschuldigung, ich spreche nicht Deutsch. But I'd just spoken it, hadn't I? So they'd keep talking to me in German. And the thing I said more than anything else while I was there was, langsam bitte, langsam, slowly please, slowly. Because if I went slowly, I could sort of get enough words to get some idea of what it was they were saying. But, yeah, it was difficult. Went to the butcher's. There was a lady butcher, and she was on her own in the shop, and meat was something that Austrians at that stage, it wasn't that long after the war. It was 13 years after the war when they'd been actually starved in Vienna, completely starving. And the first thing that had arrived in the way of food was a train load of cucumbers. And they all ate cucumbers like crazy, and their guts weren't used to anything except a slice of bread each day. And they all got, diarrhea and so on from these cucumbers. And someone told me that cucumbers were rolling down the gutters in the street. But so I would go to get some meat, and I would look in the window to see what she had, and I'd decide which one I wanted. And I'd go in and say, bitte ein halbes Kilo das Fleisch, and point to what I wanted. And she wanted me to have the best, because Austrians only ate meat on Sundays. That was a special thing for Sunday, was to, they went off to church while the meat was cooking, and they came home and had a meal, and then they all went walking through the streets, gently walking off this big meal they'd eaten. And so I'd say what I wanted, and she would wanted me to have exactly what I needed. And so she'd say, in German, are you going to, how are you going to cook it? Are you going to roast it or fry it or steam it or boil it or, whatever. She'd go through all these things that might do with this piece of meat. And I found that if I listened carefully, she would stress the one that she wanted me to do.
Oh.
So, how are you going to fry it or roast it or steam it or. So I'd say, yeah, I'm going to steam it. And she'd say, oh, good. And she'd give it to me. But she wouldn't, if I didn't give the right answer, she wouldn't give me that meat. She'd give me something else that would be better to do in the other way, So that was, it was really hard work going shopping. But
it sounds like people were very generous to you.
They were. As long as I tried to speak German,
yeah,
they were very, very helpful. If I had just walked in and spoken English, they'd have given me no time at all,
Which is fair enough, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes I'd be walking along the street with the kids and I'd have the baby. By then we'd got a pram, which is a tiny little pram. I couldn't believe it looked like a doll's pram, but it wasn't real full-size one. And so the baby would be in the pram and the other kids would hold one on each side, hang on to the handle, and we'd walk along, And people would hear me talking to the kids or them talking to each other in English, and sometimes people going by would say, good morning. And I'd say, oh, good morning. And they'd say, you see, I speak English. Yes, very nice. You do. You speak English very well. And they'd say, I learned it in the prison camp.
Oh.
I'd think, oh, right, okay. Which kind of prison camp? There were two kinds of prison camp, One was where the anti-Nazis were thrown, and the other was where the English, through the soldiers they caught, So, yeah, I'd just say, oh, very nice, and walk on. But quite often they would always stop and look at the fact that we had three kids. They'd always want to look at the baby. And it was midsummer, and he was dressed in a singlet and nappy, and people would be telling me off about something I was doing. I knew they were telling me off that I was killing the baby, but I didn't know what they were saying. And so I'd just say, yeah, 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 good, Yeah. And I'd say to the kids, hang on to the handle, and in a minute we're going to run. Okay, now run. And we'd run off and leave these people telling me off. And so on, because I had no idea. And then later on I learned that what they were saying was that the baby wasn't properly dressed. He would die of a cold and so on, and I was killing him. And then also, because I lost the... in that three-day journey across there, I couldn't feed him, and I lost the ability to feed him, and so he was on the bottle, which was an absolute no-no in Austria. What the hell was I feeding the baby out of a bottle for, you know? And so they would all tell me off about that too, if they saw the baby with a bottle. And so I just would say, yes, thank you very much, and run, kids, run, and off we fly, you know. And so, yeah, it was interesting.
What was Jim's job?
He was in the research and documentation department. He had to go through all the newspapers from around the world and pick out any articles to do with peace issues and cut them out and document them, put them into a proper sort of order and collection.
So why would Austria employ a New Zealander to do that?
Well, they had five departments, and it was an international organisation, so there was an English department, a French, a German, a Spanish, what were the others? English, French, Spanish, German, and something else. Russian. And so there were those five departments, and he was employed in the English department. And at the whole office, the entire place, had French as their international language, and his French wasn't terribly good, but he was able to cope. And of course, there were a lot of other English people there who did speak a lot of languages. And so they would always translate anything that we needed help with.
In those days, 13 years after the war, peace would have been a big thing.
Oh, yes. Yep. And so they used to hold international conferences. They had two while we were there, and both of them were in Sweden, in Stockholm. And Jim had been to one in that month before I got there, and then he went to another one the following year. And people came from all over the world to the conferences. They were massive conferences.
And you stayed in Vienna?
Yep. Yep, I was minding the kids.
Yeah.
Back home. But, so when the reason I learned that people thought I was killing the kid by not having clothes on him was at 6 weeks, I went for a 6-week checkup, you know, to this special place, and a special doctor for each thing that's wrong with you, you know. And we had a children's doctor and a other doctor, you know, for Jim and I and so on. And so I went to this special place where babies had to be looked at 6 weeks, and there were about 50 women there with their babies, new babies. And I looked, I couldn't believe it. It was a really hot day. And these kids were dressed in so many clothes, they looked like little mounds of mashed potato. Oh. That's what it reminded me of. They were sitting there with so many clothes on them that they were like a head on top of a mountain of clothes, you know. And I watched them take things off. The amount of things they had, there was one pair of trousers that was held up by braces and, you know, all sorts of things. And I thought, good grief, poor little cows, you know. And they all looked white, like the mashed potato, you know. The kids' faces were all white. They hadn't been out in the sun, that's for sure. And so, yeah. And when I went for my 6-week checkup after the birth to another doctor who specialised in maternal issues, you know, and I said that we became close friends with the baby doctor. She was just, yeah, a lovely lady, and we were good friends right up until the time she died. So I said to her, I'm going to need to have, what were you to call it, Dutch cap? What on earth do you call it properly? So that you didn't get pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
And like a rubber.
Yeah, ring. Yeah, a diaphragm.
Diaphragm. And I'd had, after, when I was first married, I had one that was size 70, and then I, after Roger was born, I had one that was size 75, and after Jenny was born, I had size 80. And so I went to this bloke to, and it was illegal. It was, I mean, Austria was a 98% Catholic country with Catholic rules ruling everything, and it was illegal to have contraception of any kind. And so she sent me to a doctor who specialised in this sort of thing, who would be willing to order a diaphragm from England. And so I went to him to get measured, and then he sent off the order to England. And when I had to go back to him to collect it, and when it came back, it was, I don't know, 65 or 70 at the most. And I said, that's not going to be big enough. And he said, oh, you English, you always have far too big, and it's bad for you. It'll cause, you know, aggravation if you have a big one. That's very bad for you. This one is the best. So he wasn't going to change it in any way, so I just thought, well, I hope he's right, you know. And within no time, I was pregnant. Almost immediately, you know. And so I said to the lady doctor, the baby doctor, what am I going to do now? I said, I can't have a fourth child here. It would be impossible. And she said, yes, it would. It would be quite impossible for you to have a fourth child here. And she gave me the name of another doctor who I could go and see, who would be willing to do an abortion. And so I went to see this other doctor, and he was the kindest, loveliest man. I went home and said to Jim, if I ever wanted to have a doctor take me through pregnancy, he was it, you know. He was such a kind, caring man. But still, this is what's going to happen. And so I had to go off to his place early one morning, get on the tram, and I remember walking through a big gardens, and by then it was snowing, and there were little bird feeding things hanging in on the trees in this park, and birds coming for their breakfast, you know. And I remember walking through there thinking, this is all very pretty, you know. So I went into his place, and he put me up to it and did the abortion, and I slept for a while, and he came and said, I'd woken up, and he said, are you okay now? And I said, yes. And he thought everything was okay. And he said, will you be able to walk on your own? And I said, oh, I think so. I get up and walk around the room, walked round and round the room to see that I could walk on my own. He said, I can't help you in any way. You have to get to the car on your own without any staggering, you know. And he didn't speak English either. And so by then I had some idea of what he was saying. You know, I could understand what he was saying. And so I got my gear together, and he took me out to the car, which is parked out in the street outside. And as we walked out his front door, a policeman came walking past on his beat, you know, with his hands behind his back, walking along slowly down the street past the house. And as we walked down the path, the guy asked me, did we go to the Belvedere? Did we spazieren gehen in the Belvedere? Well, I knew what the Belvedere was. That was a castle with big grounds around it that we used to go to about 20 minutes walk away from where we lived. But it was the only place where the sun reached the ground because of the high buildings. And so we used to go there so that we could walk in the sun. And he was asking me, did we go there spazieren gehen? And I had no idea what spazieren meant. And I said, spazieren? And so he made walking movements with his fingers, like they're doing those ants, that your fingers do the walking. And I said, oh, yeah, yeah, spazieren gehen in the Belvedere, yes, yeah. So then I headed for the wrong side of the car, because they drive on the left of the road, and I was going to get in his seat, you know, and he said, come to this seat here. Oh, yes, right. So I went down and got in the passenger seat and he drove me home.
So what would have happened to the doctor and to you?
He'd have gone to prison. He'd have lost his license. And I'd have gone to prison too. Utterly, utterly a no-no.
Good grief. And yet they didn't support big families.
They didn't want
support big families. You're saying that people were saying, oh, you've got three kids?
Oh, yeah, that's right. They didn't have big kids. What big families? What they had instead was Alsatian dogs. Some of them would have two Alsatians and they'd be walking along the footpaths weren't very wide. They were just wide enough for the pram with me behind it and kids tucked in close on either side. We filled the footpath, basically. If we met someone coming the other way with a pram, we had to pull over and squeeze past each other, you know. And people would come along with their two dogs taking them for a walk. And all the dogs had to wear, when they went out of the house, they had to be wearing like a cage on their front, on their mouth, on their noses. And so that they couldn't bite anyone, you know. And I knew that by then Stephen was, you know, 6 months old, 9 months old. As he grew up, I knew what was going to happen every time we got level with the dog. This kid, for some reason, would reach out and punch it on the top of the head.
Oh.
And I'd think, oh, my God, you know. And so I'd be ready to get past in a hurry and take off with the kids. Because people used to get very angry.
Yes.
Punch their dog, you know. And the dogs were a bit unsure of it too.